Jamie with you on BBC Radio Wales. It's 12 minutes to 10. The Royal Mail's just issued new stamps highlighting notable figures from British fantasy literature. You may have seen them from Arthurian legend, Morgan Le Fay and Merlin, Terry Pratchett's Discworld, Nanny Ogg and Rincewind from C.S. Lewis's Narnia books, Aslan and the White Witch, J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter, of course, Dumbledore and Lord Voldemort. So does this mean that fantasy literature has finally come in from the cold and been embraced by the establishment? Dr. Dimitra Fimi is here from Cardiff University. Good morning, welcome. Let's start at the beginning. Was there always a sniffiness then about fantasy in the first place? I mean, most of us don't mix in literary circles, so was there a snobbishness about fantasy?
I think there's been a snobbishness right from the point that realism becomes the most important and the most celebrated literary genre. And this is, again, the kind of beginnings of the 19th century, really. You have the likes of Jane Austen, then later on, actually, the person who speaks for realism as the best kind of literary genre is Henry James. And he's talking about this kind of dichotomy between the novel representing a slice of reality against kind of the fantastic as something childish or not necessarily serious enough. And I think that's followed through all the way to today. And there is probably an issue with popularity as well. There is this kind of widespread idea that if something is very popular, if something appeals to the masses, it can't be good, which obviously, you know, there are elements of truth there for certain works, but then there are good works that are very popular and bad works that are very popular. And it's very easy to kind of lump them all together in one lot.
I mean, C.S. Lewis was treated with a fair amount of contempt when he was lecturing, wasn't he?
Yes.
Because of the success that he found with his work outside. Yes. I mean, for most of us, those were the books that we knew and loved, and most of us will be surprised that there was this sort of snobbishness about...
Yeah, in academia, for sure there was a snobbishness, and especially with people like J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, who were dons and were supposed to be writing, you know, serious academic work. And I mean, mind you, you know, in all fairness, C.S. Lewis wrote quite a lot. Tolkien wrote a bit less because he was spending a lot of his time writing the fantasy, you know, inventing this fantasy world. But you know, it did create a genre. It did create a whole new kind of gave a whole new spirit, kind of looking back at mythological motifs, you know, kind of using really strong characters and stories that have been around for a long, long time.
So what is it that changes then? You say that there was a sniffiness about fantasy. Why does suddenly fantasy get embraced by the literary establishment? Is it success? Do people enviously look on all of these books being sold? We think of things like Harry Potter. You can't ignore that sort of success any longer.
No, you can't ignore it. But at the same time, I think that, well, there's a new generation of scholars, for one thing, without the kind of fixations of older generations. That's definitely one thing. And at the same time, I think we do have great quality. And there was a period around the 60s, 70s, there was a lot of copycat fantasy around. You know, famously, The Sword of Shannara, a book that's rewriting Tolkien, you know, in a simplistic way. There was a lot of that, and obviously that gave fantasy a bad name for a while. But in the 90s, for example, you have J.K. Rowling, you have Philip Pullman, you have people that win prestigious awards. You have Terry Pratchett, who has been knighted for his services to literature. And obviously, I think, you know, a major element is also the fact that you have the film adaptations. You have a bigger kind of portion of the population engaging with these texts, not just kind of the stereotyped teenage readership. So, I think there's a second chance there. And so, at the same time, in cultural studies, as I said, younger scholars looking at these works from a different point of view.
So when these fantasy figures finally end up on Royal Mail stamps, you know fantasy has arrived.
I think it's a great step towards that. I think there's still a bit of a fight to fight, and it's happening. But yes, this is a great recognition. It's the process of canonisation. You know, when you find yourself in these kind of established venues,
fantasy writing seems to undergo great popularity in ages of enormous change. Mm-hmm. If you look back to the start of fantasy in Victorian times, yeah, and this great industrialisation, where people are almost fearful, aren't they, of what's happening to them. And now you look at the way we live our lives now and the globalization of our lives, and we again see this huge increase in fantasy writing.
There's a lot of some people call it nostalgia, some people call it escapism. I think it's a reaction to modernity and to quick rhythms of life and to change. As you said, the first fantasy writers really are William Morris, George MacDonald, Charles Kingsley. You know, these are the people are kind of reacting not only to industrialization but to Darwin and this idea of kind of the decline of religion as a very important kind of power in society. And interestingly, a lot of these books kind of deal with spiritual themes as well. I think that there's an element of that too. But yes, of course, we are at the turn of another century now. And again, we have this sense of things happening far too quickly for us to grasp. And at the end of the day, you know, the storylines, the motifs, the myths, the legends that go into fantasy have endured for thousands of years. So, you know, we keep on going back to them for stability.
And it's worth mentioning, of course, that some of these fantasy tales are based on Welsh mythology.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, the Arthurian legend and the figure of Merlin are definitely part of the Welsh heritage. And again, it's interesting to say that the Arthurian legend, as we know it, we probably, most of us know it from Malory, to be fair, or from Geoffrey of Monmouth, but there was an older Welsh tradition where Arthur is kind of a fairy king with a host of kind of wild hunters. You have Merlin, Myrddin in Welsh. Who is a wild man in the woods, you know, this madman who also possesses knowledge and inspiration. And all of this kind of Celtic or Welsh material later on feeds into the Norman texts and to the Arthurian legend as we know today.
Well, now that fantasy is a huge hit and it's part of the establishment, is there an inevitability about decline as well, that like all things, it's a fashion and it will pass for a few years?
Possibly, but I don't think we've just got to that stage yet. I think there's still, as I said, a bit of a fight to fight. I am teaching fantasy at undergraduate level at UWIC at the moment and a Gerard Tolkien master's level course, but there aren't many of those around. So I think we still have a bit of time in front of us for these kind of these concerns about decline.
And I'm assuming it's easier to engage students in fantasy genre than things that are perhaps, dare I say it, more challenging, things like Chaucer and Shakespeare and things like
that.
Yeah,
but very often you end up talking about these texts. I mean, for example, Tolkien uses Beowulf many times, references to Old Norse mythology, and you end up revisiting these texts from a different angle. But the students do get interested in the ancient or medieval texts. So it's a great gateway also to this material.
And things like Harry Potter in particular owe such a lot to the advances in technology. I mean, you imagine if J.K. Rowling was writing 100 years ago, it would be very, very difficult to bring a lot of that to popular attention. It's so easy now, isn't it, because television technology, film technology allows you to do the things so easily that she writes about.
Yeah, I mean,
about.
I suppose there is something to be said about the marketing of fantasy, but to be absolutely honest and fair to J.K. Rowling, the Harry Potter books were not aggressively marketed in the beginning. It was a genuine case of good storytelling, and it got really into the attention of parents from word of mouth. You know, one child talking to another, then to the parents, then to, you know, oh, have you seen this book? Read it. And I really like this. I like the fact that this comes from the top down, from the bottom up rather than the top down and the aggressive marketing.
And, of course, the great thing about it is it has brought a whole generation of children into reading who might not necessarily have been turned on to reading.
Yes. I mean, that's a side effect, because the stories are intrinsically good and intrinsically worth reading and discussing and exploring and researching. But, yes, as a side effect, that's great, of course.
Good to see you, Dimitra. Thank you very much, Dr. Dimitra Fumi. And the news that the Royal Mail has issued fantasy stamps highlighting all of those wonderful, notable figures from British fantasy literature.